Are you ready to feel more energized, focused, and supported? Go to layeredsuperfood.com and add nourishing plant-based foods to fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Use our promo code Dr. D at checkout to save 15% off your purchase today. You know, throughout the years, I've been taking more time to improve my overall health and well-being in numerous ways. Health encompasses a variety of factors, and I just like to explore different ways to improve my health. Liquid IV is one of the ways I'm doing that. Liquid IV is a category-winning hydration brand fueling well-being. I really like the convenient packaging and variety of flavors. Liquid IV also believes that equitable access to clean and abundant water is the foundation of a healthier world. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code Dr. D at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Dr. D at liquidiv.com.
1, 2, ready for the interview. And if you get a cue live on a laptop, watch what I'm going to do. Welcome to the show. Let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo. Let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real, that's the motto. Real talk pronto, Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait, gotta be social. Network global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social. Network global, a home for the locals.
Dr. Jessica, here we are.
Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Yes, of course. One, I love your background, by the way. Seems like you've done so much. And I want to jump into non-ordinary states of consciousness. And,
okay.
And this I love this topic, but I love talking about this with other people, but describe non-ordinary states of consciousness. What's kind of the operational definition of that and how you got into this?
Okay. That's a big question. It can go in a number of directions, but what I really like is usually when I'm teaching and doing presentations on non-ordinary states of consciousness, NOSC, what I usually explain is there isn't really a definition because to hard fast define that means that we have to hard fast define ordinary states of consciousness. And we can't do that because you know, our awareness, our states of consciousness are on a spectrum. They just are, okay? And so we can move through what we might call the range of ordinary states of consciousness into the non-ordinary states of consciousness, and there's a continuum within those. Now, I really like Stan Grof's work, Dr. Stanislav Grof. I trained directly with him many decades ago now, a great privilege in my life. And, you know, he's one of the grandfathers in this field of transpersonal psychology. And what he did to try and simplify things is he coined two words, holotropic and hylotropic. And hylotropic refers to that, the range of kind of ordinary, regular, everyday, drive your car, go to work state of consciousness. And holotropic refers to the non-ordinary state. So it's kind of their umbrella terms that will, you know, help us have a language to talk about these things. Because that's part of the problem is we don't, in Western civilization, we just don't have a language to discuss these things. And so developing words and developing cartography, the maps, helps us to know the realms, the territories, and actually what language to use. Is that helpful a little bit?
It's very helpful. It makes me think about kind of ordinary states, quote unquote, ordinary states of consciousness. And are we sure about what those states of consciousness are? And if they're, it's interesting, what is ordinary? Like you mentioned, it's like, because people are, someone's ordinary state of consciousness may be extraordinary in many ways. So how do we create a language around even that, ordinary states of consciousness?
Well, that's where we have to be willing to, this is like saying, you know, you know, about shoe sizes, okay? That the average shoe size in Canada would be a size, you know, 8 or something.
Right.
Well, that's going to be way too big for a whole lot of people, and it's going to be way too small for a whole bunch of other people. So we have to look at all the ways that we've gone about that science, modern science, and everything from fashion, okay, to medicine, has done their best to try and create ranges. So whether you're having a blood test, they're going to have a range as what's a normal range for, let's say, your hemoglobin or the iron content. You know, you're going to have a range for weight for insurance purposes. So there'll be, if you're between X and Y on the scale, weight scale for your age and your height and stuff like that, you're in a normal quote unquote range. But this is, you know, observation and research and studies, and they can't pick a one thing because we're all uniquely different. You know, and we have our own biochemistry, our own genetics, our own life story, our own karma. And somehow we're all trying to get along here on planet Earth. Well, some of
right.
us are trying to get along and some of us are fighting over it. Okay, but that's a whole other conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at trying to define these things, we fall short simply because that's what life and human experience does. So the best we can do is borrow from transpersonal psychology to try and use terms simply to help bridge understanding. And so, you know, when we're talking about ordinary states, yes, you can definitely be on a range there, and that depends on many things. And a big piece of it is your state of awareness.
Interesting.
Your daily practices, your consciousness, your level of awareness, your sensitivity to yourself, to the flow of life around you. And it's so easy for us to get into our little bubble. Do you know what I mean by our
yes.
little personal me bubble? Okay. and kind of block everything out and get really into maybe a mental story, a thought form, okay, which has immense limitations within itself. And when we're doing that, when we're over-focusing on one aspect of our human experience, often the other aspects will fade out. Over time, we won't notice that they're not there. So we have a lot to learn in, let's call it modern society and Western civilization. We have a lot to learn from Eastern cultures and teachings because they offered us and do offer us a tremendous amount. And we also have a lot to learn from indigenous peoples because
yes.
they live in a reality that is inclusive of the interconnectedness of the individual with each other, community, and with nature. In the Eastern traditions, you know, what they had to offer Western civilization is they have to offer us the meditation practices and the other practices that involve being very present, being aware of the body, being aware of the breath. All these, whether it's yoga or tai chi or what have you, all of these practices and traditions teach us to be in ourselves and not just in our mind, which we are very intellectually identified in our culture or physically identified. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. It makes me think, adding on to what you said, is there a lot of evidence or has there been a lot of observation that humans crave non-ordinary states of consciousness throughout our existence?
Yes. You know, one of the most famous quotes on this is in a letter exchange between Carl Jung, the psychologist, and Bill Wilson, the founder of AA, the 12-step programs,
yes.
Alcoholics Anonymous. In a letter exchange, Bill Wilson was describing this kind of hunger and what addictions, what he was seeing in the 50s, right? And Carl Jung wrote back and he says, "Looks like you're describing the thirst for wholeness." This longing that each of us have for wholeness, and which can only be fulfilled when we have a connection with, now, whatever word people are comfortable with God, with the divine, with the other realms. So we all have, I believe, that we all have this innate longing for wholeness. And how I live that and experience it is meaning to be complete with ourselves. So with the self, wholeness with the self, and then with nature, recognizing that intimate interconnection that we have with nature, which is so fascinating, not just that we eat and we breathe and we drink water.
Right.
So way beyond that, okay? You know, and with community, our interconnectedness with community. People just don't seem to understand with how much we rely on each other. I rely on Hydro-Quebec for electricity. You know, I was in a rush to get my computer turned on and geared up to meet with you today because I had a plumber here, okay? I needed the plumber to fix a blocked kitchen sink, you know? So we need each other. We need all the skills and the experience and the wisdom, and they all fit together like some giant tapestry of human experience woven together. And so the fourth thing, so self, nature, community, and the fourth thing is this experience of what I call the divine. Indigenous people might call it great spirit. Others call it the great mystery, whatever word people are comfortable with. But that understanding, that connectedness that we have with those four vital kind of items that are essential for human experience in life.
Very interesting. I love that. I want to delve into how your work and experience with psychedelics moves into this aspect of what moves into those four things and how that altered state or non-ordinary state of consciousness contributes to potentially our well-being as humans.
Sure. Great question, Darren. Thank you. You asked me a little earlier, a little bit the same, you know, and I didn't answer it. So thank you for bringing it back around. So my own journey with non-ordinary states of consciousness began as a young child when I would have only what I came to understand years later were spontaneous experiences of connections with other realms. I tend to be very visionary. My dreams would speak to me and show me things I didn't fully understand. I would sense and feel things around other circumstances and people that I didn't see. It wasn't talked about. So it's not as if we're in a culture that speaks about these things.
Right.
And normalizes them.
Yeah.
Western culture, civilization doesn't do that.
No.
If I'd been born in many different places around the world, this would be everyday conversation, you know. So speaking with your ancestors, seeing things, hearing things, sensing things would be all part of the normal range of human experience. But we cut that out, you know. And how did that happen? Well, it happened, you know, we can talk about that in a minute if you want, because I want to finally answer your question. So here I am, you know, a developing human going through those challenging early years of child and development and then into the teenage years and all those developmental processes that we go through. And at the same time, our intellectual capacity is changing. So these conceptual level changes are essential. You know, we can't, you know, be a two-year-old child with an adult conceptual level. No, we want to learn how to eat and tie our shoe and, you know, do things like that, you know, and walk and skip and run and do all the things that we need to do, get used to being here, you know. So there's the body's developing, the mind is developing, our body-soul connection is emerging and developing, our personality is taking its place and our character and everything like that. So here am I having these experiences and I'm searching everywhere to try and get answers, to try and understand what I'm going through, what I'm experiencing. And I'm finding them in odd places. You know, by the age of, I think I was, 16, I was reading Aldous Huxley. And, you know, finding and the Old Testament of the Bible. Okay, I was raised Anglican, which really dwells only much in the New Testament, which,
right.
You know, and the rituals were lovely and familiar, but they didn't feed my spirit. They were familiar rituals and, you know, lovely, but my spirit wasn't being filled and I wasn't getting any answers to what I was innately feeling were spiritual experiences. And so I found some in the Old Testament where the what they could call the prophets would have these experiences of the heaven parts, and they talk with a being and things like that. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe some of that is what's happening to me. This led me into a series. It tossed me through. First of all, when I was in my early 20s, I had two LSD experiences. Now, I do write about my journey in the books I published last year. I published two books, Volume 1, Volume 2, Ayahuasca Awakening, A Guide to Self-Discovery, you know, and Self-Mastery and Self-Care. Putting together 50 years of my own experience and everything that I learned in about a 40-year private practice, teaching workshops, and now 27 years of drinking and serving Santo Daime in our church. Santo Daime is also known as ayahuasca. So I'm called and drawn, and it really was clear for me, don't go here and yes, go there. And I think that this is available for all of us if we sit and if we're quiet and if we meditate and if we pay attention. I'm deeply grateful to the Eastern traditions from what I learned from years in the ashram and then all my experiences in Buddhist teachings and my Buddhist teachers and what they taught me, pay attention, be aware, stop thinking. Oh, that's hard.
That's very difficult. Yeah,
really, intellectually identified. So that's still a challenge for me to, you know, to say, okay, mind, turn it off. So, you know, you learn as you go along, and it's a never ending journey. You know, Joseph Campbell's work of the hero's journey is a perfect example that we can learn from of the stages that we take in our search for ourself, because that's what we're doing. The search for wholeness is also the search for the real self.
Yes.
Who am I? Why am I here? What is life about? All those existential questions that we all ask ourselves, and some more deeply than others, you know, and that's okay. We're all where we are in our incarnation, and, you know, there's not one size fits all in self, deep self, inner exploration. And so my own personal search led me to study what I studied, to learn what I learned, to experience what I experienced. Now, after my two LSD experiences that kind of very quickly merged into one, they were only a few weeks apart, at the end of the second experience, and as I said, I write about all of this and include it, I say I meet a being, and the being says, you won't be doing this again. It's like, okay, I won't be doing this again.
All right.
And I got what I call my personal 10 commandments. And I was shown, you do this. And so I said, okay. And I have that kind of personality that lends itself well to wise discipline. When I see, yeah, this makes sense, eat well, this makes sense, exercise, this makes sense, have a positive attitude, this makes sense to, you know, just basic common sense that things, it's like, yeah, it makes sense to not smoke cigarettes and not do this. this isn't too hard to follow, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the journey unfolded. And I was many years in my trainings and my education, academic and otherwise. And then spirit led me to in my transpersonal trainings and to Brazil, where I was introduced into the Santo Daime tradition, spiritual tradition. And I brought it home and founded a church. That was 27 years ago. And so non-ordinary states of consciousness in my work, my teaching, and these books, I do my very best to try and provide the cartography. What are the maps that we're exploring? Yeah. What's mine and what's not mine? What belongs to me and what's out there in the collective unconscious that I'm vibrating with? You know?
This is interesting. I tell you what, because you are one of the people that I've talked to a lot of people in this space, and you've probably seen through LinkedIn and stuff and people I've chatted with, but very few people have your level of experience and history with this. So it's two thoughts I have here. One, questions is one, why has Western culture been so cut off or not accepting of these different practices? And two, what do you make of the current kind of movement towards integrating these practices in Western culture as it stands now?
Well, two really great questions. Let's see if I can answer. And bring me back on point if I want to.
We'll do it. I'll take care of it.
Good. So first question, you know, is how did we arrive here? Well, I think that what we have to do is look back into European history. Okay, we have to look into the development. Now, let's take medicine. Medicine has been around since, for let's say 100,000 years, if not more, when somebody figured out that using this plant on an open wound helped the wound heal. Okay, and taking this plant, a tea made from that plant or root, helped your system feel better. Okay, so, you know, the plants are for the healing, then the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nation. These are basic truths. Okay, we have medicinal plants all over the planet, indigenous people from the beginning, early human beings had the wisdom, and they passed the wisdom on through apprenticeship. Okay, now this still exists in some traditions. For example, the Santo Daime is an apprenticeship tradition. You don't do a week here, a month there, 2 years here, and get a certificate. No. 27 years later, I'm still apprenticing. I am still in my journey. I don't have a certificate, and I never will. With my last breath, I will still be learning. Okay? Still on the journey.
That's love that. Love that.
Yeah. To quote Jack Kornfield, he says, there is no arrival of enlightenment. There is only enlightened activity.
I love that. I am like, I so vibe with that. It's like, actually, one of my favorite athletes, he was saying, they said, oh, you know, he had this big accomplishment. He said, is this, have you arrived? He goes, you never arrive, ever. And it just made me think of what you said. Anyways, with that.
Always on the journey. Okay, yeah. So how did this happen? Here we were, you know, human beings evolving in all the different ways we were evolving. And we went from hunter-gatherers to become, you know, agriculture societies and growing crops. And then growing crops, eventually cities developed. And, you know, we can look at the whole history of the human race. And we seem to be doing okay, you know, and made lots of errors along the way that usually can be sourced down to the need for power. So kind of greed and all the things, the usual human feelings kick in and try to take over. So, but if we look, there was a kind of a very definite thing that happened where body, mind, and spirit got split into three things. And we can see right there in European history when there's the big debate. And what happened was the strength of particularly the Catholic religion at the time, which was dominant in a lot of the developing medical. I mean, look, look what happened to Galileo. You know, they didn't like what he had to say about the telescope.
That's so, right.
You know, yeah. House arrest. Okay. Roberto Saggioli, you know, during Second World War under house arrest for his, you know, concepts and things like that. So we can look at how science, even medicine, you know, all of these things were for a large degree controlled by a very powerful religious dogma. And so, you know, then we start arriving where they started to, okay, we'll manage this because the soul can belong to the church. And then the body belongs to the doctors. Okay, so you see the first split. And then along comes the, you know, kind of the science of psychiatry and psychology starts to develop. And so they get the mind. Okay, so we got broken down into three parts, the soul, the body, and the mind, you know, and that's not the human experience. Now, we can all understand in medicine that there's specialties, like there's so the body is so complex that you need to have cardiologists and orthopedic surgeons and ear, nose, and throat specialists and what have you. They have broken the body down, but let's not carry it too far. We're still a whole body, you know. That the soul and mind and that the spirit being taken out as kind of being the property of something else that was very tight and narrow, that did not have an unordinary state of consciousness at it. And we have to look at the role of, you know, Karen Armstrong's book, A History of God, highly recommend to anybody who wants to understand. She takes the three patriarchal religions and breaks them down and says, see what happened to culture and society. See what happened, how we all got split off, and not only were we divided up, but we then had to have an intercessor between us and the divine. So all of these, what Einstein called the illusion of separateness, this illusion of separateness.
Interesting.
Came in. And so we started to see ourselves as being unconsciously separate. And so part of what we need to do is bring back the wholeness. So your second question, I think, was, you know, so that's kind of how I think we got here.
Yeah.
We also got here in part, want to acknowledge this, is because we tried to erase indigenous cultures everywhere the Europeans went. And all the Europeans have to say, yep, mea culpa, we did that. Everywhere they went, the islands, United States, Canada, around the world, they did not treat as equals and share knowledge with the wisdom keepers of the people of the land. And so their wisdom and knowledge was erased because of dominant religious beliefs, political beliefs, and, well, greed. Yeah. So that played a huge role. Can you imagine how different the story would be just in North America if instead of trying to erase, we had embraced? And if we had shared wisdom and knowledge, here we have this technology that we want to share with you, and you have wisdom about nature and the plants and the animals and the creatures and everything we want to learn from. Different story.
Would have been a very different story.
Story, yeah. Can we do that now? Is can we build bridges? And can we really, can all of us who feel thus inclined, can we, in whatever capacity we are able to, can we open the conversation and welcome in and find that way forward together? And so all this separateness happened, the separation, okay? And where are we headed? Is that the second question? Where do you
see? Yeah, I mean, based on what you just said, the separateness, it feels like we're trying to piece this back together on some level.
Yes.
Now, I guess it's debatable on how well that's going, but it does feel like there's this somewhat of a renaissance of like, hey, this is important and people are hurting and we can no longer just rely on the separateness of the physical nature of the body or just the mind. Like there is an altered experience that we have kept in the shadows for a really long time. And when this is part of the wellness plan, we need to start bringing this together. I just wonder if we're actually starting to do that, to create the wholeness again, you know, in varying degrees of it at this point, you know.
Well, I think that many people are. I mean, I can peel back to, you know, the 70s when I was talking about this, not so much about certainly entheogens and psychedelics. I wasn't saying anything much about that then. You know, it wouldn't have been heard, accepted, and I didn't get any spiritual go-ahead to be talking about it. You know, I had to wait until spirit says, okay, open your mouth, okay? So the thing is I can go back to the 70s, and certainly I'm not alone. My name is Legion, of people who were talking about ecological care of the earth, sustainability, the danger of air pollution in our food supply, refined products. I was teaching, writing, speaking about, as many were, about a daily practice of health and well-being and taking responsibility for ourselves. We can't stand and, you know, point a finger at, sorry, I'll use cigarettes as an example, but all these people who had to wait until it said this will poison you. I mean, I'm sorry. This is common sense that, you know, or what we have now, the warnings around alcohol, you know, everything in moderation and how to find the balance of health. Some of us have been talking about that for a long, long time. And through the decades, with joy, we're seeing more people are talking and more people are talking. Now, you're probably aware that, you know, many, many years ago, there's a prophecy that's attributed to Tibetan Buddhism that says when the iron bird flies, then Buddhism will go west. Well, that was the plane, okay, the airplane, and that's what happened. in the early mid last century, the Eastern traditions came west. And of course, there's another one about the North and the South, and all attributed to the Mayan people of when the eagle and the condor can dance together and learn from each other that peace and healing will begin. And I like to think about, you know, the East and the West, the union that happened and the doors that opened, and now the North and the South. And I feel great privilege that I was, you know, part of those frontier people working on the emergence of the North and the South. When I brought the Santo Daime here and founded the church, very few people in Canada knew what ayahuasca was. And I had to kind of, let's use an old term, gird my loins, because I knew I was facing a challenge with our government. Okay.
Yes.
And I needed to get on my horse, take my sword, and put on my breastplate, because we were, you know, facing a big challenge in 17 years of working with Health Canada.
Wow.
But as I always say, I have only good things to say. The people in Health Canada and Office of Controlled Substances respectful, interested, always gave the time, received the research, worked on our file. And it has been a real pleasure and privilege to work with them. It took time because our government had no idea. The exemption that I received was the first one since the first one.
Whoa.
For entheogen to be used in Canada. It had never happened before. Now, in the 50s, Diefenbaker, can you imagine, if you know Canadian politics, Diefenbaker, decided to give a regulatory amendment to the Native American Peyote Church. He said, these folks use this plant, and we're not going to tell them they can't, but only they can use it. So peyote has a regulatory amendment in Canada that it can be used by the Native American church only. Okay. And so the exemption that I worked on for these 17 years and then partnered with Jeffrey Bronfman, then of the UDV in the United States, a very dear and long-term friend, I said to him, come on, you got to help here. I'm getting a little tired in the journey. And, you know, to make those last few years to do a deep education of our government. Because they had no clue. They had no, it just looked like drugs on the controlled substances, on the controlled substances list. This is what they're listed with. So these sacred plants that have been used for millennia are right up there with heroin or cocaine or, you know, all kinds of other things. So it took educating, not just Health Canada, but the Department of Justice and other departments in our government to understand this is something different. So it's a slow process. And for what's happening in the community, a couple of years ago, I with some colleagues, we wrote and published a paper called Entheogens and Psychedelics in Canada, Proposal for a New Paradigm. Anyone interested, you can get a copy PDF on my website. It was published in the Canadian Journal of Psychology, which, of course, people will know is a peer-reviewed journal. Right. So it had to pass muster to get published. And we put forth all of our concerns about the movement and our best advice. In the end, we had over 20 contributors across Canada, senior people in academia, in clinical researchers from many different departments and universities. And so, you know, that's there for people to read if they want to take what they can from that and bring it happily. People, researchers and clinicians in England and Australia have taken our ideas and are bringing them to their government to say, listen, this is possible. Education, credentialing, and ethics are the main things that need to be looked at, whoever wants to work with these substances, because they're not getting the apprenticeships.
Yeah.
Once you get to your apprenticeship, mine was 14 years. 14 years, I was under the supervision of the elders of Mapia, 14 years, and I have great gratitude for all the excellent and wonderful guidance and teaching I received. You know?
Amazing. I tell you what, it's, do you think a lot of the resistance that there is still out there is based off of just the lack of education or just kind of the socialization of drug culture from the past. People think, well, these are been deemed to be these type of drugs, Schedule One, whatever it may be in different countries. So automatically this gets passed on to people through the ages and go, this is bad. They may not even know why. They just have been socialized into it. So you think a lot of this is just educational, not knowing actually what something actually is.
Well, yes. And here's the thing is there's risks and benefits. For example, sacred plants in the hands of traditions, either the older shamanic indigenous, I'll talk about our sacrament, Ayahuasca, Santo Daime, because right. that's the one I have some small authority to speak about. And, you know, for thousands of years, it was in the hands of the shamans. It was used for rites, for rituals. And the shamans and their apprentices, medicine men, medicine women, you know, they learned to work with the plants in the forest, and they would know when to give and when to not give. And to anybody, when these plants were being taken, there was always ritual with it. And there was the governance of wisdom, experience, and the mentoring of the elders in the community or the tribe. Okay? Now, they would know when to not serve someone. The same way a good guru would say to somebody who's been meditating too much and not eating enough and has become completely ungrounded and isn't taking care of being here now, okay, cut down your meditation, you need to go walking every day, and you need to, you know, you actually need to eat meat, okay? Yes, this is recorded, okay?
Yes.
So the teachers can look at their students, or the shamans can look at the people in their tribe, and they can have the wisdom and the experience to say, okay, you need to. The same way a good fitness trainer can say, yep. okay, you're pushing it. You can't do a 100-pound press. Sure. You need to cut back, right back down to like 60 pounds or 50 pounds, or you're just going to rip your muscles. And, you know, so a good lifeguard is teaching the class, okay, you learn how to swim in the shallow end of the pool. Once you've got it in the shallow end, then you can go in the deep end, okay? And so this kind of practical apprenticeship style is totally missing in a lot of, let's call it, the psychedelic movement.
Yes, completely. Yeah.
This is worrisome and concerning, because a lot of us have been in the field a long time. Look at this. And you know, we were very trained with Stan Grof, so I was, you know, exposed to all of his teaching and the work he did, you know, decades and decades ago at Stanford in palliative care using LSD in extremely beautifully supervised sessions with people who trained with him and had the maps and the cartography to work with it. And so those are some of the concerns. What are the risks? And can we please examine and discuss the risks? And can we talk about the shadow?
Most definitely. I actually have been talking about the shadow quite a bit with my last few guests in this area. And I think it's becoming more prominent having discussions about this.
So glad to hear that. And, you know, you said, why is our society so resistant? Yes, in part because of the way... what happened, you remember, I'm an aging hippie, okay? So remember the 60s and 70s, you know, I'm 33 now. So, you know, I was wearing beads and singing about peace. And the thing is, what happened then was a huge culture shift. Culture was vibrating to shift out of the 50s. The tightness, the control that's certain religions had over society, certainly here in Quebec, it was a Catholic state, for example, and you know, the restrictions on women, and which made every time you restrict women, people don't understand that you've also restricted men, because they are now cast into a certain role of dominance that they may not want, and for them,
interesting.
For them to be whole, there must be a complete rearrangement of that you know? So all of these things were exploding. Women were trying to take their place. They were, what were we doing, burning our bras? And we were doing all these things. And we were, you know, taking management of our own bodies. And it's when birth control really came to the forefront and became something you could actually talk about in public. These things were not mentioned, you know? You didn't burp in public, never mind talk about safe sex, right? You know, birth control. These things were not discussed, right? And so all of this blew open in the 60s and 70s. And this culture change was essential, this cultural revolution that happened. And it was, you know, the street drugs, let's call them that for now, cannabis and, you know, all the various things. Certainly cannabis and LSD played a huge part in this. And then the other things that were scattering around, okay? But because they were unregulated, because a lot of people didn't know what they were doing, because they were being taken in unsafe settings, because people who just had like rainbows and unicorns and lovely experiences didn't understand that somebody else may have like a seriously difficult passage, and nobody knew how to integrate that, that would be labeled psychosis. And would become a mental illness that then the person had to be blocked down and medicated to shut it down, instead of seeing that there's a good chance that was a spiritual emergency and needed a whole different approach. So the work on spiritual emergency, this is another, you know, big part of my kind of teaching area through the decades, has been the distinction between spiritual emergence, spiritual emergency, and mental illness. And they are, again, on a continuum. They are not three separate things. We use vocabulary. When does spiritual emergence, the unfolding of one's spirituality, creativity, sense of authenticity, okay, these can unfold the same way a flower opens to the sun, okay? Or it can be spiritual emergency. It's like the egg cracked and not coming back together.
Right.
It can't go back together and it's all broken. And what do you do? Okay. So there's those things. And then there really is something called mental illness. But unfortunately, today I've seen too many instances of spiritual emergence and emergency being pathologized as mental illness. Hmm. Blocked grief becomes depression that takes medication that shuts you down. No, I'm not against medication at all. I think that the use of medication can be extremely wise and needed if someone's not sleeping, if somebody's not functioning. Okay, let's get you functioning and let's see how we can work with this. Okay. And, you know, if somebody can't go to work, and if somebody, then there's a lot of support that's needed there. Okay, but I have seen, you know, spiritual emergency be pathologized, but I've also seen mental illness be spiritualized. Hmm. And that's a problem, Darian. That's a problem.
I mean, there's a lot here. I have to tell there's a lot here, because your history is so deep and you have so much wisdom and knowledge that there's just a lot of, for someone like myself, a lot of new information. And I think for the listeners, there'll be a lot of new information, because a lot of the listeners' history isn't deep. It's a very new phenomenon for a lot of people, a new version of reality. So for me, I like to get a fuller picture. So I was very excited to speak with you. I was like, okay, now we're going to get like a more of a history, a better history. And it's very difficult to know unless you have the history, the map. Yeah, you have a cartography.
I cover all of this in my two books. I cover all of it, the realms of the unconscious, the maps of the unconscious, all of it, difficult passages, dark nights and difficult passages, encounters with darkness, and all the maps of how to guide along with this. Volume 2 is all about self-care.
Yeah.
So self-care being self-awareness, self-love, self-respect, and self-responsibility. Now, you have to say that a lot of times we're not learning what we need to be learning about that. In our society, parents have been, this last period of time, parents are often both working because of the need and a want to maintain a certain lifestyle. And with women wanting to not just stay at home and take care of children and put dinner on the table, some women love doing that. I certainly did that when my children were very young. And although I was studying every evening, I was going to say we're back in bed, but never mind that. That was my joy. And so, you know, there's finding all on single parenting, how hard that is on both. It doesn't matter, father, mother. Okay. And so where do you have time to do all of this? And schools are so heavily loaded with trying to teach the academic basics.
Right.
So
right.
Where are the elders to teach children this? It's not in our society. We take older people and we stick them in residences and homes, and because they themselves have been spiritually deprived, a lot of them just don't know how to pass it on to the next generation.
Yes.
They just don't know. And so generation by generation, it's like losing a language. It's like losing traditions. What our indigenous brothers and sisters here in Canada talk about, where we lost our culture, we lost our language.
Yeah.
We're trying to find it back and dig it back out. Well, we should be understanding that because we lost our spirits.
Man, this is unbelievable. I mean, what's really cool is there are some high schools I know, is even one here in Washington State, it's called an intergenerational high school, where a big part of the curriculum is they bring in elders during the beginning of the school day and the end, and they mentor younger people and talk to them about life. And it's just a very different curriculum, but it's not done enough in the United States, especially. We almost like we're trying to get rid of these types of things, but we're losing our way. You know, the separateness, it goes back to the separateness. We're trying to separate this very beautiful thing that is, to me, is very beautifully written into who we are in our history.
It's in our DNA.
It's literally it's in there.
Yeah, it's in there, but we've forgotten it.
Yeah.
And it's not gone. It just lies forgotten in our unconscious. And so why are people seeking wholeness? Why are people taking psychedelics? Why are people taking entheogens, sacred plants?
Right.
Because some part of them wants to wake up. Some part of them wants to experience wholeness. Some part of them wants to feel this, you know, unification with nature, with self, nature, community, and the divine. And how to do that. And then here comes the other problem. So, Darian, hang on with me, okay? We want an instant fix.
That's right.
We are a nation of people. We're a continent of people. That we want instant gratification. People don't want a 14-year apprenticeship.
Correct.
They want a 6-month quickie course, and now I'm certified to do this. Okay. They want 1 month in fill in the blank Peru, Colombia, somewhere.
Yes.
And now they can do that. Okay. And so, you know, they want 3 fill in the blank ketamine and MDMA psilocybin sessions, and they want their entire life to be healed. So it's all about heal my trauma, give me these substances. Yeah, well, what if these substances, the sacred plants I work with, they just don't, you know, wave a magic wand and you're all healed now. They show you what you have to do.
Most definitely.
Bolded capital letters.
Most definitely.
And when you come back, if you haven't done that, you know, the gate guardian says, wait a minute. You didn't do already.
You didn't do it.
I gave you.
Yeah.
Hello. You know, so even if you're taking small steps, there's a hymn in Mr. O'Neill's hymn book, you know, that says, even if you do a little bit, just do a little bit. And so there's that taking small steps forward. They don't have to be giant leaps. They just need to be small daily steps in the good direction, and then spirit will support, and you know, your own life's force will start affirming it. So how do we resolve our continent, nation, society's desire to have instant healing and instant trauma release and instant something else, and put blinkers on for everything else that might occur? You know, it might have been Jules Evans, shout out to him, great researcher, who's been, I hope it is, and I'm not crediting him with somebody else's work, but anyway, if I am, please forgive me. Who put out that, you know, that one of the biggest trends in, you know, entheogens and psychedelics is not talking about the risks. Yes. Right. And it's not talking about, everybody's is fuffing up the I got healed stuff on their social media and in their documentaries and everything, and not talking about the people who couldn't integrate the experiences, who had really difficult passages and who are still struggling to try and understand what happened to them.
Right.
And so, you know, those are really important conversations to be having. And the people who are committed to working in the field need to be sitting together and having those conversations. And, you know, some of the recent conferences that I spoke at, say last year, the one in Toronto, Research to Reality, you know, that Cam H sponsored, and my friend Brian Rush was the key person organizing that. I sat on the organizing committee and was a speaker there. And you had finally a wide range of researchers and clinicians and people from Indigenous communities speaking to that, and people in the field of diversity and inclusion speaking to that. And then so many people came up to me afterwards and said, oh my God, this is the first time an elder in an entheogen tradition spoke at a conference like this. So that was the first time that voices who need to be speaking together were heard, instead of the clinicians and the researchers talking right here and the elders trying to talk over there. And we need to have a roundtable discussion.
Most definitely. Well, I gotta tell you, this was extremely enlightening for me. And an incredible history lesson that I know the audience is going to really just eat up. This is great. So, Dr. Jessica, please let everyone know how they can get more of you and learn more about the work you're doing.
Well, anyone can go to my website. It's www.revdrjessicarochester.com. And you will find that I am offering audios and videos available free for educational purposes. People who are interested in getting my books and learning more about non-ordinary states of consciousness and the cartography, the maps, and the tools for self-discovery and self-care, you can access through Amazon or through my website to the publisher. And, you know, that's, don't confuse me with our church. Yes, I'm the Madrina and founder, but our church, people often try to contact me because they're interested in our church. That's santodaimi.ca, santodaimi.ca. And we have usually a waiting list. People need to be patient. We're a small center. Everybody wants to experience it, but those who feel really called to then serve in the line are much fewer. So this is, you know, I'll just close this with the story of Jesus, who three people came to him, three men came to him asking him to heal. Could you please, we hear you're the healer, could you please heal us? And so he says, okay, and he gave them instructions, and they grumbled and said, well, do you have to go, and we're going to have to dip in this river? And they said, okay, we might as well do it. So they did, and they were healed. Only one went back and followed him and said, you've healed me. How can I serve? And so a lot of people want to get healed, and very few people actually want to serve. Right. So I invite the listeners to think about that. And so,
well, thank you for that.
We do not solicit. Okay, people have to ask, they have to apply, there's visitor screening. We do not solicit. It's against our tradition and the sacred plants. No one should ever be solicited into using them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on, and we will certainly be in touch. Thank you, Dr. Jessica.
My great pleasure. Thank you.